Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. My name is Howell. This is Jamie.
Yo.
And this is Matthew Wandless.
Stop!
Excellent quality from Matthew Wandless tonight, doing the showdown. AirPods, which are over-the-counter Apple devices that you can buy instead of buying a cheap-ass but expensive microphone from Amazon, which is what I'm using.
I can't believe this is the third time we've started the podcast, mm-hmm. and you still insist on mentioning my AirPods in the first 30 seconds. I feel like I'm being branded as some kind of ostentatious little Apple twat.
Tonight on the podcast, we're going to discuss a number of things. A couple of them will be spoiled, but most of them won't, and we'll warn you before. We've got Unbelievable, Walking Dead, Succession, QB1, South Park, Rick and Morty, Goliath, Good Girls, and I've just finished Mad Men for the second time in my life. God, that series is good. Oh my God, it's even better now than it was the first time round. It's incredible how that thing has stood up. It's amazing. If you've never watched Mad Men, just get the heck on it. So good. Now
I would be very interested to watch Mad Men again because it's one of the great modern series that I watched absolutely as it came out.
Yes,
because I got into it really, really soon after it started.
Oh, did you?
I can't remember who put me onto it, but it was like I was there right from the start.
Well,
so I had to wait for ages between some of it. I think if I remember, 4 and 5 had a really big gap between them.
Right. Right. Well, it's got such it's got far more relevance now than it did when it was released. When it was released, there wasn't the popular debates and activism around things like sexism in the workplace, and this thing is kind of about that from the off. One of our main two characters, Peggy Olson, embodies the plight of a woman trying to survive in a man's world, and it's incredible. And that Jamie pointed out recently, some of the best scenes you'll ever see on TV are between Peggy Olson and Don Draper, and they really are phenomenally well written scenes, least of all because Don Draper rarely shares information about himself, but when he's in scenes with Peggy, he's like 100% honest, more so than with any other character. I can't tell you how much I find that series more on the button in terms of all of those issues, but in a way that is not preachy or hacky, and yet it was written before everybody or writers felt like they had to mention those things, you know. It's so good.
And Matt, I was the same as you. I watched it as it came out originally, and I went back and watched it again when it originally came on Netflix, and it is brilliant. It's brilliant watching it again. When you just binging it and just being able to watch episode after episode and really enjoy and invest in the world, cause it's so well realized, so brilliantly performed. Like you think about Jon Hamm, I was listening to an interview with Jon Hamm, and he was such a such a left field choice really for that role. He wasn't a big star, and they waited for a year almost to try and get a big star, and he was the one who was nailing. Matthew Weiner wanted him, but all the big execs wanted someone bigger, and they held the nerve. And a year later, after they made the pilot, the show continued with him in the main role. And so good, so glad it did, because he's so enigmatic in that performance. It's amazing. Mm.
Have you seen, speaking of Jon Hamm, have you watched Between Two Ferns, the movie?
Yes.
Have you seen the outtakes?
The scene where the bit where Zach Galifianakis says, the Don Draper suit is right in the Smithsonian Museum, right next to Bill Cosby's sweater.
And it's an outtake at the end, and the way Jon Hamm laughs with like a guttural response.
Yeah. What's great is also I always wondered how much laughing they did in those interviews. Yeah. You always wondered, and to see like Zach Galifianakis really struggle to make it through some of those questions.
Yeah,
was really that was the best bit of the film's really good, but
it's okay. But the outtakes are just make it all worthwhile. Yeah,
I haven't seen that film. I kind of don't get that show.
Oh,
really?
What is it?
Really
work
for me. Yeah.
Why?
Well, I don't find it amusing.
Oh.
Wow.
Well, it's the.
No, or at least, like, maybe I've seen one or two bits of it that I find really funny, but the rest of it, it's just. I don't know. There's something about that. I don't know. No, I don't know what I'm going to say. It doesn't tickle me.
He explains in a. I watched him and David Letterman on My Next Guest with David Letterman talking about that show and how the concept of it was essentially if you're going to poke fun at anyone, there's no one better to poke fun at than privileged Hollywood A-listers. And there's another of the outtakes. I'm going to try and get the question right. He says to Matthew McConaughey,
yeah, another one you're going to
when you and Woody Harrelson are in a yeah. scene together, are yeah. you concerned that there is a sack somewhere that is not being hackied?
I mean, oh man.
But hang on a sec. Sorry.
Yeah.
The people who are in it know what's going on, right?
They don't know what the questions are going to be. They know that the idea is that he's going to ask them the most rude questions. He also
says, but it's not like a kind of Dennis Penis thing where he's.
No. They know.
So it's just about them trying to keep a straight face.
Exactly.
Basically.
Exactly. And also, he doesn't write the questions, and you almost get the sense that he hasn't read the questions before.
I didn't know that.
He's delivering them. Another one is final one. Brie Larson says to Brie Larson, "You are known to walk out of interviews when personal questions are asked. This is a two-parter. A, is that true? And B, what age were you when you first got your period?"
Well, it's directed and written by Scott Aukerman, he's a really funny guy. Like, he has a podcast called Comedy Bang Bang, which was also a TV show that was on Netflix, and there's some really funny episodes of his podcast in which him and a number of comedians, sometimes Zach Galifianakis or the cast of sometimes the cast of the Silicon Valley cast will turn up. They all do, like, they improvise different, like, just come up with characters and improvise different, like, conversations, and it's really funny. Like, sometimes it doesn't work, but when it works, it's brilliant. So it's really worth a listen.
Well, there we go. That's Between Two Ferns and Mad Men dealt with. Now, Unbelievable, to take a swerve. Unbelievable has been on many people's lips recently because it's an incredibly powerful multi-episode documentary about the true story of a search for a serial rapist in America. Matt, you haven't watched this?
No.
Okay, Jamie, you have?
Yeah, but not finished it.
Oh, right. Oh, is that because you're going slow, or have you just started it?
Well, we started it, watched episode one, found it incredibly grim, and knowing it was a true story made it even harder to watch, you know, that first episode. And we stopped. So we watched episode one, we're like, oh, I can't do this. And then we went back a week later, and it changes gear a bit from episode two, doesn't it?
Merritt Weaver kind of makes an entrance.
Merritt Weaver and Tony Collette as detectives, and the investigation then kind of takes place into what's really happening. And then it gets really good. Like, it starts to get really good from that point on. So we're about halfway through.
I'm not going to...
Who's Merritt Weaver again?
You know, that you love her.
I do. I'm trying to think
what from.
She was
the lesbian
doctor.
Nurse
Jackie.
In Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
She is a good example in this. It's called Unbelievable, and you out loud say a number of times, that is unbelievable about things that happen. Throughout it, and what I find also unbelievable is that there is a cast of particularly female actors in this that it's unbelievable that we haven't seen more of them. And Merritt Weaver, we've seen lots of Merritt Weaver, but she is phenomenal in this. She is just brilliant, and the other female actors in it as well are equally. It's just such a strong cast.
Can you set it up again for me? I didn't really catch what it was.
Well, the setup is it's a true story about the search for a serial rapist, and the premise in the first episode really is that a girl who's in care, a foster child, says that she's been raped, and the premise of this whole thing is that essentially she is not believed, and the implications of that.
Oh, right, okay.
And then Merritt Weaver's character and a number of other characters are in kind of further away, either in that state or in another state, I'm not sure, but far away. And they're the kind of detectives who are finding other cases that are similar. So the long and short of it is that right at the beginning, you kind of know that at some point these two detectives are going to figure out that she was telling the truth. But in the system as it's currently set up, how is that possible? And it is unbelievable, and it's excellent. And if you haven't seen it, you must. It's really good. You know, I don't particularly like bleak stuff that goes on too long and things, but it's after you get through the difficulty of knowing.
Well, unless it's about gruesome crime, it seems.
No, just unless it's written well. So it's
this sounds like Mindhunter with rapists.
Jamie's correct. This is it's really difficult to watch, but it's not too slow. It's just difficult to watch because you know it's true.
Yeah. If you get past the first episode, is especially hard to watch.
Because isn't that the case with Mindhunter as well, though? Sorry.
I suppose so, yeah. Yeah, you can have that. Yeah. But I find that a bit easier to watch because...
So that's what you like. You like for dramatizations of true gruesome crime to take their sweet time.
Well, I think the difference with this is that the reason the first episode is so difficult is there's a lot about the rape itself, whereas in Mindhunter you tend to be talking about things after the fact, don't you, and not experiencing the stuff. So I would say is the difference. But yes, I do like crime stuff. Walking Dead's back. I've missed out on. I haven't even realised it's back. And the sad thing is, even though I enjoyed the last section that we watched, it didn't. Knowing that he's not in it, knowing that Andrew Lincoln isn't in it, it doesn't drag me back there. Jamie, you're the only one who started watching it.
Yeah, episode one of season 10, Lines We Cross, a long one, sort of just over an hour.
Right.
And it's, I won't talk too much about the plot, but it doesn't go very far, let's just say. It kind of covers an event that happens, which is essentially, it's not a massive deal, but, and then it goes back in time to the different parts of the group and covers their story up to this event. So it's quite low on plot in that way. There's not a lot that's happening. And you just kind of get into grips again with the characters and where they are, and a bit more with the geography of, because that's been the harder thing, I think, with the last few series, is that they're more spread out now. They've got these different places and you're trying to work out who's where and who's in control of what. So a lot of this episode felt like
it was difficult to get a sense of scale, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I think that's what they've been trying to deal with this for episode one of season 10 is like, oh, this is this place. This is where Daryl is. Oh, look, they're over here. There's Michonne. And it's kind of trying to put all that, the pieces together before things kick off again. Because it kind of leaves, the end of the episode ends with, okay, I'm gonna, shit's going to come around the corner very soon. So
it sort of reminds me of the Star Wars problem of like when a franchise or when a thing becomes so big, you end up with so many different things going on, and
yeah,
and you feel like you have to spin all the plates. When actually, it'd be nice to just go back to a sort of linear plot.
It does feel to me when I'm watching it like I'm watching a show that should have ended 2 years ago. I do feel a little bit like these characters that I loved for a while, I'm starting to not really kind of care as much, or I'm at least a little bit like indifferent towards them now, whereas I really cared about their journey for a long time. And so that's kind of, it's like a weird feeling to be like, oh, we're still here. They're still alive.
Do we know when these conversations. Andrew Lincoln films are going to be out?
No, I don't know much about that. I don't know what's going on with that. I mean, I wonder if...
I'll definitely be on them like a bonnet.
Yeah,
like a bonnet. On it like a bonnet. Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they're going to do... I mean, there is talk of it wrapping up, isn't it? I've heard that there is talk of it finally might be ending at some point.
Oh, wow.
Well, I do think that they've missed a trick in the last couple of seasons by sort of staying in the same territory, not only geographically, but kind of thematically.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that if it doesn't move away from the kind of outsider's encroachment, that kind of thing. I think they need to find something totally on a different scale.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I want to see, I want, you know, I don't know how many years we're into the actual narrative now, but I want to see someone going back into a city.
Yeah.
And I know it's like tremendously physically difficult to do.
Yeah, I want to see Vegas with zombies or something.
Great idea. Great idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, get a hotel.
Yeah. I mean, I think it looks like the Andrew Lincoln stuff is going to be outside of the cordon in some way or in another world. I mean, if the entire thing doesn't wrap up with Andrew Lincoln in a helicopter pulling Daryl up into the helicopter to take him out of the mess and kiss him passionately.
Out of a horde of flaming zombies.
Maybe having sex in the helicopter. Wouldn't that be a brilliant end to the entire thing? Rick and Daryl finally getting it on.
It'd be an odd way for it to go. It'd be an interesting one.
Can you imagine if a TV series, though, once it had made its money, it decided it would go out like that? Just leave
just start trolling the audience.
Huh? Yeah. Succession. Matt is now at the end of series one. Have you got on to series two yet?
Yeah, I'm about halfway through series two. But right. I wanted to, and yeah, let's just say right now, hello, spoilers, I'm going to talk about anything and everything in series one.
And seriously, I mean, I know that you might love this podcast and want to listen to our voices some more, but if you have not yet watched Succession, it is
available.
It's on Now TV and Sky Atlantic and all that. It really is an excellent TV series. You don't want us to ruin it for you. So that said, switch off now. Matthew, take it away.
Yeah. I just want, for those people who are out there and have seen it and are interested, I just want to talk about how utterly fantastic this show is.
When
we spoke about it last, I think I'd watched maybe two or three episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And now, God, I can't remember anything this good.
So now you've witnessed the jizz in the mouth episode.
I swallowed my own load.
The end of
it was so hot.
The end of that episode.
Was it hot?
Yeah.
He is brilliant, Matthew.
Yeah. Oh,
he's the best. My God, he's so good.
He's Sarah's favourite character. And the end of that episode, and they're all stood there in silhouette at the end of a stag do, which we've all experienced, the letdown of a night out, and gradually he tells everyone that he swallowed his own jizz, and that becomes worse and worse news the more people he tells.
Yes. But then also when they finally get home and stuff, Shiv goes to kiss him on the lips.
Yes.
And he just does this amazing little kind of head fake, like, oh, I shouldn't, but oh, okay, I will. It's just, you can see the thought process so clearly in his movement. It's absolutely wonderful. But the climax of the first series, there was a point in there where I was worried because... Like when Kendall drove the car off the bridge, I was like, well, that's disappointing.
Yes, I agree.
Because it felt like, oh, this is just another way for his ship to come off the rails.
Yeah.
But then the way they brought it back, like the fact that the kid Alec died in there.
Oh, yeah.
And there's that horrible moment in series two where they reveal to you that the kid was, you know, he would have been alive, and he undid his belt and stuff. He tried to get out, but he couldn't.
Yeah.
But then that scene where Kendall's brought in to the big drawing room the next morning, and Logan's there, and Marsha and Jerry and the security guy, and they just kind of lay it out in front of him.
Yeah, it's just
and
so
he, when he breaks down on the sofa, and Logan stands over him and says, "Give me a hug, son." And opens his arms for the first time. It's like the first gesture of fatherliness.
And
yet,
it's still the most evil move that he's made.
Exactly. It's
horrendous.
The most lovely and at the same time the worst thing that he's done.
Yeah, I've got you. I've got you, isn't it? And the way that series two then progresses, and there's a how many episodes in are you, Matt?
Four or five. We've just had Boar on the Floor.
Have you?
Oh my god, that was an amazing episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, if you could live a life that involved that much money, how much would you put up with? Is what that scene is, isn't it?
Yeah.
They all on their face know that this is horrendous and beneath them and awful and humiliating, but they take it. And it, and you hate them for it while still so feeling sorry for them.
It's so good, isn't it? The morning after as well, where they're all having the buffet breakfast.
Yeah.
There's that awkward
Yeah, that woman goes over and says, sausage.
So, Matt, have you got... There is a conversation between Shiv and Kendall that's really quite lovely. Have you got to that?
I think I've just had that.
And it made me cry. There's a line where he just says, I don't know what I'm
yeah,
for.
If I didn't... He says, please take care of me because if I didn't do this, I don't know what I'd be. I don't know what I'm for, I think it is.
And it's just, oh my God.
Heartbreaking. It those moments where, me. Because the whole series spends so much time dealing with people's armor and they're all battering each other all the time.
Mm.
And no one ever, like those, in the couple of episodes after the wedding, when Kendall is utterly broken in front of his siblings.
Mm.
They're just like, what the fuck is happening? Who are you? What are you doing? Fight back. I remember Roman at one point says, fight back. Yes. Fuck you, fight back.
Yeah.
And he's just, you can see that he's spent, completely spent. But now he's sort of come back and he's like sort of Terminator cyborg Kendall without any kind of emotion whatsoever.
Yeah.
And that whole stuff with Volta, the way he just guts that company.
It's awful, but he knows where he stands now. He's just an animatron for his father until his father wants to kill him.
That's right. But then those moments where they peel it back even slightly, it's just like everything floods out. It's so superb. I can't believe how good it is.
Drama wise, I have to say that I didn't get over the disappointment quite as well as you did, I think, in terms of the car crash. I'm still a little bit annoyed that, like I always say, that they didn't take the hardest choice. And the hardest choice would have been to let Kendall win and then have to deal with that. Instead, we have to do this, or it is a sitcom ultimately. You have to keep him in charge. You have to keep Logan in charge.
I think I agree with you. It would be interesting to see the other side of it.
Because he did kind of deserve it, and you did want. It feels like prolonging the same conversation, but that said, it is phenomenally well written, and the jokes are still hilarious. And this is where I think it's the same creator as from Elmsmere Port, Jesse Thingy. Yeah, they still managed to do the comedy so well, but those touching moments are so deep. The drama stuff is as good as any drama we've discussed on this show. It's brilliant appeal. Anyway, let's move on to QB1, which I've not heard of. Matt's watching QB1. Have you seen this, Jamie?
No, I've been tempted by it. I'd like to know
what is it.
Good.
What is it?
Well,
strange title.
I was trying to think. Because I remember we did discuss Friday Night Lights on an episode once.
Yeah.
But I couldn't remember if either of you were actively involved in that or whether you'd seen it or liked it or anything.
I watched a few and didn't go back, but I did really like it. But is this another sports one, is it?
Well, yes and no. So it's by the same makers of Friday Night Lights. But this is reality TV, essentially. This is a documentary that follows... Three promising to different levels high school quarterbacks. Hence, QB1 is quarterback number one. And they're all in their senior year of high school. And it's Friday Night Lights for real. It's called QB1 Beyond the Lights.
Right.
And it's there's a lot of sports documentaries around these days.
Yeah, the most recent one that you raved about was the Formula One one, obviously. How does this stack up?
Which I loved, but obviously very different types of things. Formula One is like, it has a similar turnover to the GDP of some small countries.
Yeah.
And But the thing I love about Friday Night Lights and the thing I love about QB1 is that high school football is children playing sport.
Yeah,
these are fucking children playing a game, but it is watched. It is televised across America.
It's crazy.
They play in front of crowds of up to 10,000 people sometimes, and I can't believe what happens in this game. Like I can't believe what the life of these kids is like.
Yeah, it's a far cry from Lads v Dads, which would be our equivalent.
Well, I remember I'd get nervous playing in front of just a bunch of like 20 parents on the sidelines when you're playing on, you know, Sunday league games or school games. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
The other thing is, these kids are built like brick shit houses. I mean, you would guess they're 30, wouldn't you?
Honestly, some of these kids' faces, particularly the ones if they've grown out their hair or something like that, there are a couple who you see in a few shots in this, and it's like, that kid is 28 years old.
Yeah,
and he is 16. It's insane, but it's just because obviously there are kids in schools around this country who are playing elite level football. You know, there are kids who are 16. There's a 16-year-old playing for Barcelona's first team at the moment. Mm, he has to go to school the next day. The same is true of any number of kids around England as well. But because that is an exterior activity, it's not rolled into the school curriculum. Whereas this is like, it's by the schools. The schools do it all, and then the colleges do it all, and then they pass them on to the pros. So the factory starts so early, and I just, like, when I look at these lads in this series, like one of them, there's a point where one of them suffers an injury, and they're all in their final year of high school, so they're going to go on and play college ball next year, which is pretty much when their careers get decided. But they've already spent 3 years being groomed to be leaders, to be athletes, and to worship this game. Like a quarterback in particular, because they have to be the figurehead of the team. It's very rare that it's built around another position. Mm. Or at least they're the one who's got to read the game at the line, and they can make calls at the line and change what the strategy is right there.
Right.
The pressure on these kids is just nuts. It's absolutely crazy. They're sitting there, and I love watching their relationships with their families and how supportive the parents are. And how the parents, like, I'm in the second series now, and there's this kid playing somewhere in California, who, by the way, might be the most handsome, technically handsome man I've ever seen. This boy, I don't know how old he is, but it's just like, whoa, you have been, like, designed. This is weird. He looks so perfect. But him and his mum will sit there going through, they watch the game he played the night before together for 2 hours, like in the morning. I don't know. Wow. I've said enough. I think it's fantastic. I really like it. It's really well made, and it's fascinating.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Good. Matt's made a few recommendations recently that he's been lukewarm about in his conclusion, so that sounds fantastic. I'm looking forward to that.
I kind of hate it as well.
I want to give a quick mention to South Park. Two things. I think I've mentioned it before. On Now TV or on Sky, wherever you get your stuff, there is a documentary called 5 Days to South Park or something like that. If you search South Park, you'll find it. It's a documentary following Matt Stone and Trey Parker trying to and how they make an episode. They make it like no other animation. Animations take months to make. They do it in 5 days, and it is incredible. It's brilliant. And I'm mentioning that because I revisited it, having Netflix just taken on some of the best South Park episodes ever. And I've just watched the second to last series. There's a current one going out. Today the news has broken that China have banned South Park. They've deleted everything related to South Park, so no one in China can watch it because South Park took them on about human rights and stuff. That's happened today.
Yeah, well, that China have also done the same thing to the NBA basketball because someone, a big owner in NBA basketball, called out the Hong Kong situation.
Incredible.
So they've completely banned. Basketball is massive in China, and they've completely cut ties with the NBA. They're going hardball on everybody at the moment.
Also, recently, I think it was either Lyon or Lille in the French Ligue 1 had a match rescheduled so that it could be shown on Chinese television. Wow. And when the fans heard about that, they organised a mass protest about Tibet, not Hong Kong.
Wow.
Really?
in the crowds. So there was basically, it was on every single camera.
Amazing. This the second to last series was the one that was going out when Clinton and Trump were going up against each other. And the... It's unusual because they're not self-contained episodes. The whole series is a kind of long plot, which is just gets better and better for me. And Mr. Garrison is actually the person running for president, but he's made certain changes like fake tan and a wig that makes him exactly Donald Trump. And it's just brilliant. I think they're the finest satirists of our time, and I think they'll be looked back at that with 21 series of really getting to the core of hypocrisy in certainly in, you know, pop culture, but in politics and the Trump Hillary stuff is so on the nose. When you think that they were releasing it when it was going on, there's a line in one of them where someone looks at the camera and says, "I think we'll find that Twitter has a lot more to do with this than we thought." This is when they were going up against each other, and it's brilliant. They say, "Why? How is this happening? How are people voting for this guy?" Gets to the point that Mr. Garrison doesn't even want to be elected, and so he's going out to say the most offensive things that he can, and he just keeps getting more and more supporters. And they say there's a mass epidemic. People are eating these berries that are called member berries. And the member berries, if you listen to them, they are always going, "Remember when E.T. was on TV? Remember when America was great? Remember when..." And it's like this addiction of particularly older white men thinking that life was better 30 or 50 years ago. And it's this mass addiction that's causing the problem underlying it all. It's just, it's layered and it's brilliant. And, you know, you still at the front of all that have Cartman being... hilarious and offensive, and I just love it. Just go and chuck yourself into it if you haven't.
Yeah, I will. I feel bad that I don't watch more South Park.
I know,
I feel guilty.
And then you watch it and go, "Why am I not watching this?"
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask what are your experiences of South Park? Because I watched it when it first came out,
So
when I must have been 17 or 18, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And at that point, it was like, it was kind of shock humor.
Yeah.
And then I remember the movie came out, and I think I pretty much didn't watch it after that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
it. Not because of anything, but it just, I think, I can't remember it, maybe when it wasn't on an accessible time or something like that.
I think partly it's the satire is mostly based at American stuff. And if you lived in America, it would be this staple, wouldn't it? Which is why it's run for 22 series, I suppose. But
I don't know about that. I mean, I think it's pretty global, isn't it?
It is global, but I'm just saying, I think it's easier for us to lose interest in it, because if it's a big Tom Cruise episode, that's great and stuff, but sometimes it's for satire to really connect with you, it's got to be kind of changing your life a bit, doesn't it? Or really answering questions that you see on the street every day.
Maybe.
And I think now it's a lot more offensive than it was when it started out. Something they say in the documentaries, when they look back at the first couple of series, and that was considered offensive then. What they're allowed to get away with now, because essentially they tell Comedy Central, if you're not happy with it, we'll go away. So when it came to the big the Prophet Muhammad episode, which was the big controversial one, where they were going to screen a depiction of the Prophet Muhammad, that almost was they were going to leave Comedy Central as a result of it, and then they blurred him out or something. I think it was. But I remember when that was a big one. Speaking of animation, Rick and Morty, which is something that I still never have have got my teeth into properly.
What?
Just that I always watch it
late. I thought you convinced me to watch it.
No,
it
must have been Jamie. Must have been me. Yeah,
it was you, Jamie. Well done, Jamie.
I did my best. It's just that my time to watch it is very late at night, and it's very colourful, fast, and loud.
This is a bullshit argument.
Well, that's all right. Well, that's the only reason I can.
You
think
find
of.
Time to watch all kinds of shit.
Not very late though. Not like this is like my midnight watch. I like a good Robert Redford directed film when Sarah goes to bed. You know, it's something that's a good The Fugitive.
Good Lord. Just watch on a few. Just put on a few episodes of this.
I'll try. I'll keep trying. I promise. But it's coming.
You have
back.
To get past because I started it and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Or at least I just thought it wasn't very funny.
Yeah.
But then there is a watershed moment about 5 or 6 episodes in where they basically drop any pretense that they are going to obey any kind of rules.
Right, okay.
And they just say we can do anything.
Okay.
And they do that in a great way that makes sense for the whole story and for the whole universe.
All right.
But then from then on, it means that literally anything could happen and there would be a good reason for it.
I promise I'll try. It's bad.
And some of it's just so fucking funny. But just quickly to go back to South Park.
Oh, yeah.
I do think that I've seen a lot of Trey Parker and Matt Stone stuff.
Hmm.
And they are fantastic.
Have you seen the Book of Mormon?
I haven't seen the Book of Mormon. Oh, I really want to.
It was just in Manchester for the last few months, and I went 3 times. It's just about the most perfect piece of theatre that you can see. It's flawless. I can't. I bow down.
Very, very good things.
Yeah, it's incredible.
But a colleague of mine used to talk about South Park a lot, and I mean, he fell into the trap of trying to describe too much of South Park, and I would always just be like, I wish you weren't trying to tell me what happened in this episode of South Park, because it's not like I'm going to hear you describe it and go, oh my god, that's so funny.
Yeah.
I do think it deserves more of everyone's time. I need to go back in and watch some, but there's a lot, isn't there, now?
Well, we all got tired with satire, didn't we? Like, the satire disappeared from our lives.
I didn't get tired with it. I didn't stop watching it because I got tired of it. I can't think why I didn't, but it wasn't obviously right in front of me, I guess, is the only reason I can think of.
Yeah.
Because it's not that I've ever stopped liking it. I am not bored with, frustrated by, or turned off in any way by South Park. It just... Well, it wasn't there.
I like what they've done on Netflix. Is it's not every episode ever, I don't think. I think it's just highlights. And but that last couple of series, if you go back to the one before last on there and just watch that whole one, I just think it's brilliant. It's just so good. And you get the long form, you get the sort of movie told over 10 episodes that we used to on Netflix now. It's great, really good, because it is political stuff that makes you think is a bit more tiring than stuff that doesn't make you think. I think that's why we sort of move in and out of these things, perhaps. But when there's a long form plot and when it's following the same thing, it gets more cinematic. You start buying into the characters and their arcs a bit more. It sort of compensates for it, I think. Anyway, Goliath's back. Goliath series 2. It's brilliant. It's very Big Lebowski. It's got a lot. It's very trippy. It's taken a turn. And there's some lovely cinematography. I often wonder how good that series would be without Billy Bob Thornton. I'm not sure. We don't have to talk much about this. But has anyone else started the third series of that?
No, I haven't. I don't know. I felt like the end of the last series, I didn't know if I felt like it needed to continue, but...
Well, that one was odd. That was the guy masturbating over people with missing limbs and stuff, wasn't it?
No, that was series 1.
That was series
2. Oh, no, it was. Oh, no, you're right. Yeah. It was series 2, yeah.
I mean,
that
was pretty out there. This one is somewhere else. I mean, this one is like we start in the middle of the desert on a ranch, and it's really different. It's not based in LA, this one. It's very good. It's very good.
I do want to go back. Like you said, I think Billy Bob Thornton holds the piece, because there is some bits of it that are not great. Like, it's a little bit mediocre in places, but his character's sort of worth following. And I think that's why it's worth sticking with. So yeah, there's that. And on Amazon as well, Sneaky Pete. I don't know if you two ever bother with Sneaky Pete, but that's back on series three of that. And I love Sneaky Pete. I mean, it's like a, once again, it's not like brilliant at times, but it's Giovanni Ribisi plays this kind of con man who takes on another person's identity, and he kind of follows the shenanigans, you know, the what happens with that. And it's got Bryan Cranston in the first series. It's really good. Mm. It is really worth watching. It's quite interesting. And I want to get back into that as well.
I remember you recommending this before, and it was that. You say, like, it's really good, like you think it's 80% good.
Well, yeah, that's probably because I do. Like, I don't necessarily... I recommend it, but I'm not going to say you will... I'm not sure you'll love it, Matt. And I'm not... I don't know, and with you, Howell, it's always 50-50, you know, you never know. But I still think it's a good show. I'm just not sure both of you are the audience for it. But the fact that you like Goliath, I think means you probably will like Sneaky Pete, Howell.
Okay.
So you should go for that as well.
I'll give
I don't think...
I would like to talk
in either of those.
Go on, Jamie, take it home. Take it home.
Next time we meet up, we haven't got time now, but I think it'd be good. I'd like to talk in more detail about Bob's Burger, because we've been talking about how brilliant South Park is. Bob's Burger is on Amazon now, every single series, and I want to talk in more detail about one of the most underrated animated comedies of the last 10 to 15 years.
Is this the one with the horse?
No, that's
Bojack Horseman.
That's Bojack. It's better than Bojack. It's the best thing that no one watches. I guarantee you that. And this thing, I guarantee, I love 100%. And
let me just describe the sheer gulf in terms of how seriously I take a Howell recommendation and a Jamie Atherton recommendation.
I thought we were going to make it through one episode without a massive insult. Go on.
When Jamie comes in here and he's got a bee in his bonnet about something, let me tell you, I'm going to watch that shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So when Howell comes in here frothing off about some other bullshit.
Let me just delete QB1. There we go. Great. And also, I found somebody else who really hates What's-Her-Face, so I'll get him on next week. He'll be surprised who it is.
Who hates Meryl Streep?
Yeah. Great. Right. Great.
Okay.
Done. I mean, how much time did you devote to that search? is this someone you've met before, or did you meet him online?
Yeah,
Meryl Streep forum.
Yeah, I went to an anti-Streep, bring down Streep forum. What did she really know about Weinstein? That's the title of my book that I'm writing.
Wow. Oh, God.
That is exactly the kind of unsophisticated satire that can really turn off an audience.
As if she didn't know. They all bloody knew. Everyone knew about Jimmy Savile, and everyone knew about everybody else. It's a load of rubbish when they say they didn't. How could they not?
Just write it in your book, Howell. I'll put it in the bin.
Well done. Hopefully we've helped you find your next favourite box set. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you next week. You can email us as ever, studio@theboxsetpod.com. What's your new favourite box set that we're missing out on? studio@theboxsetpod.com. And good night.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.